Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Super Metal World. This is Michael.
And it's Ty.
This week, we are also joined by our manager, Mark. Mark, how's it going?
Oh, it is just going wonderful, boys. How are you doing?
Doing quite well. I'm very excited about today's episode because we are discussing a movie that is very near and dear to my heart in another episode of The Playback. And that that movie is Tenacious D in The Pick of Destiny.
Yeah, it's exciting. I mean, I think part of what drove the idea to do this movie is because they just started their series on YouTube, and we kind of want to cover that series as well. But my idea was to kind of have at least three episodes of that series go by, and then maybe we'd review those three or do a playback on the three episodes or something like that. So in the meantime, we'll do a little Pick of Destiny.
No, those new, just for a little precursor, those new episodes are kind of, like a build up to an upcoming album for Tenacious D. Is that right?
Well, basically I think the idea is that every episode is going to feature a song by Tenacious D. And by the end of the series, you'll have a full album.
Would be awesome. My guess. Well, that's very exciting.
Let it be known that the previous episode has a grotesque, graphic sex scene that is just out of this world. It's completely out of control, and it's so good though, because that's why I love Tenacious D. They will just say the filthiest shit, but they're such talented musicians that like you want to listen to it over and over again. And this song, have you seen it yet, Michael?
No, I haven't. I've only seen the first episode, so.
Okay, well, Ty, maybe you can back me up on this. I thought it's pretty similar to that Fucker Gently song.
I
think it's called Making Love or something, but it's like Fucker Gently, but more of a ballad, I guess. Mm-hmm. You guys talked about power ballads recently. It's kind of got those aspects of it, so I'd highly recommend.
Beautiful. So let's without getting too much into it, because we'll cover that, like Ty said, in an upcoming episode, kind of those new Tenacious D videos, but let's get excited here about Tenacious D and the Pick of Destiny.
Hell yeah. Throw on your Sasquatch outfit and get crazy.
get ready to
my little baby Sas. I like when he, I don't know. We'll talk about it later. Okay. So before we get into the meat and potatoes of this episode.
Meat and potatoes.
Let's just do some plugs here. So remember that you can go to www.supermetalworld.com and you can check out all of our previous podcasts. The one before this, we talked about Machine Head possibly splitting up, and the one before that, we talked about Power Balance. Also, we have social media. We're available on all social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all the main social media that matters, really.
Mm-hmm.
And just search Super Metal World. Give us a like, give us a follow. Please rate and review on iTunes, and give us 5 stars for our hard work. This is episode 49. Thank you for those who continue to listen to us. And if you're new to listening, welcome, and we hope you stick around. Horns high.
So before we get into the our personal like thoughts and feelings on the movie Tenacious D in the Pick of Destiny, we were going to give you a bit of background about it, kind of the more the history of the movie and maybe some production information and that sort of thing. So Ty, what do you have for us?
First off, even if you haven't heard of Tenacious D, or if you've never seen the movie, please go do it. And then listen to this, or listen to it, be confused, and then whatever order you want to do it in. Also, Tenacious D has a song from The Pick of Destiny called History that chronicles the D's rise to power. So that's a good starter track to introduce you to Tenacious D. Anyway, background for Tenacious D and The Pick of Destiny. This was released in 2006. It's kind of a musical slash fantasy film obviously it's a comedy film about the comedy rock duo Tenacious D. Tenacious D has been around for a long time. They actually got their start on HBO. There's like a limited or mini series on HBO that you can even watch to this day. And I watched that limited series not too long ago, and they actually borrow some of the ideas from the mini series actually make their way into this film. So that's kind of interesting. It's written and produced by and starring the members of Tenacious D, which would be Jack Black, a.k.a. JB, a.k.a. Jables, and Kyle Gass, a.k.a. KG, a.k.a. The Rage Cage. It's directed and co-written by musician and puppeteer Liam Lynch. I guess he does puppets on the side.
Interesting.
Despite, yeah, I thought that was. I didn't dig any more on that, but guess the guy does puppeteers. I'm not really into puppeteers.
It's a very important thing to note, I guess.
It's a pretty common side hustle, I think, puppeteering.
Yeah, that's what I do on all my off nights. Who's that one puppet guy, comedian?
Jeff Dunham. Jeff Dunham.
Yes, that's who I'm thinking of.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan.
I'm also not a fan. We'll leave it at that.
Mad love to Dunham. Not really. Mad disrespect to Dunham. But he's making money. Anyway.
Yeah, he's hustling.
Yeah, let's not talk about Dunham anymore.
Liam Lynch is the guy, right?
Who?
Lynch. Liam Jeff Dunham.
No, he's not the no. Liam Lynch is the musician and the director and the puppeteer. Anyway. Despite being about an actual band, the film is a fictitious story. Duh. if you watched it, you'd realize that's stupid to have to note. Anyway, set in the 90s about the band's origins and kind of their journey to find a pick that is part of Satan's tooth that allows its users to become rock legends. So that's basically the background of the movie. I would suggest, though, if you are like a longtime Tenacious D fan, as I have been for years, go check out that HBO series. It's pretty interesting, and they're really young in it, so it's really I don't want to say unnerving, but it's interesting. So the film was released on November 22nd, 2006. It was a box office bomb, which is kind of seems to be the theme of all the movies we talk about on the playback.
Yep.
The soundtrack, The Pick of Destiny, was released in 2006 as well. And it's also considered the band's second studio album. So getting into these box office sales, the budget of the movie was $20 million. Box office made $13.9 million. Jack Black took an $11 million pay cut for this movie.
Wow.
So Jack Black usually gets paid $12 million per movie, which is crazy.
That is crazy. Yep.
And he instead accepted $1 million, which would be split between him and Kyle. So they each made $500,000 on the movie. The video DVD sales are around approximately $10 million, so it netted about $4 million in profit when it's all said and done.
Okay.
So yeah, and this is kind of similar to when we were talking about Dewey Cox. It's where the DVD sales really helped boost it and kind of throw it into that cult status, I guess. As far as main cast, of course, we have Jack Black. Jack Black, you guys have... Well, first off, let me just ask, what's the first movie you guys remember seeing Jack Black in?
School of Rock.
Yeah, School of Rock, I'd say. School of Rock or... Tropic Thunder? No.
Maybe Orange County? Orange County?
Actually, not that I knew who he was all that much back then, but I do remember him in Anchorman.
Oh,
he was,
yeah.
He has that cameo in Anchorman where he punts at Baxter.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, he's on his motorcycle.
No, okay, I've already corrected myself two different times. He was in a movie called Shallow Hell, like in the early 2000s. That's the first time I saw a Jack Black movie. And also Orange County, yeah, that was another one of his early...
Yeah, because in Orange County, I think he has the line, "Let's get naked and start a revolution." And that was pretty iconic. And I want to say that was one of his first roles that really broke him into the mainstream. And Shallow Hal is a movie about the character. I don't know the name of the character, but Jack Black's character is a shallow guy, Oh, he's probably Hal.
I think he's Hal, yeah.
Shallow guy named Hal.
Anyway, he's a shallow guy, and I don't know what happens, but something happens where he basically sees people for who they really are on the inside. So in the movie, fatties basically look like hotties, but they're really fat.
if you can believe it or not, I think critics just torched that movie, but fifth grade Mark thought that movie was the shit.
Yeah, and basically people who were skinny, if they were shitty on the inside, they looked fat. So whatever. He was in the King Kong movie that Peter Jackson directed. He's in Kung Fu Panda, which is probably one of the most financially successful movies he's ever been in. I think that made around close to $500 million worldwide.
Wow.
Tropic Thunder was also a success. He was in that, and that's where he talks about cradling the balls, stroking the shaft, and swallowing the gravy. He was recently in Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle, where he played a teenage girl. Well, teenage girl was like in his body or something. Well, that sounds really wrong. But watch the trailer. He's also in Goosebumps, which I never saw. And he is also in this really ridiculously titled movie that just got released called House with a Clock in Its Walls.
I heard of that. I had no idea he was in that movie.
Which there needs to be a porn parody just called like House with a Cock in Its Balls or something.
Yeah, it's right there. It's there.
It's going to happen.
Oh, yeah. No, not House. It would have to be like Badge with a cock. No, whatever.
Ty, I'm just going to go on a limb here and say that's probably already been made.
Maybe.
Like within the first day of it being released, it had to be made.
Yeah, a porn parody is already in pre-production.
He was also in Bernie, which I think he got some award love for Bernie, but I'm not sure. Anyway. Some interesting things I found out about Jack Black, about Jables, with some just basic Google search, is at the age of 14, he struggled with cocaine. So he was, he was snorting the devil's baby powder. And his brother died at the age of 31 to AIDS in 1989. And so that's interesting. He's married to Tanya Hayden. They have, I don't think she's very famous, but something about her dad is like a famous musician of some sort, or was. They have a kid named Samuel who's 12-ish, and Thomas who is 10-ish. Half-ass research. Rage Cage is the godfather to Samuel. Jack Black himself was atheist, but when he started to have kids, he began to raise them Jewish to, I don't know, help foster some value, I suppose, and morals and all that good stuff. Kyle Gass, KG, the Rage Cage. He's predominantly the foil to Jack Black in a lot of things, but he's also had cameos or short roles, small roles, whatever, in Elf, Kung Fu Panda. He's been in an episode of Seinfeld and Friends. He's been in the music videos for bands like the Foo Fighters, Good Charlotte, and I Prevail. So, smaller roles for Kyle. And other thing, did I mention... Oh, yeah, I mentioned all of Jack Black's movies, his notable ones anyway. Notable cameos, there's quite a few. I'll just mention a couple of the standouts. Dave Grohl as Satan. He also did the drums, and he helped write Beelzebub, the Final Showdown, or whatever. He helped write that song. Dio as himself. Rest in peace.
Rest in peace.
Ben Stiller as guitar center guy. Paul F. Tompkins as the open mic host. And for those of you, maybe there's not many, he's also Mr. Peanut Butter in BoJack Horseman. I actually love BoJack Horseman. I think it's an excellent TV show. If you guys have given it a chance and have not liked it as much, watch it through at least through the second season, and I bet you'll be hooked.
Yeah, and that Paul F. Tompkins is a stand-up, too. I think that's mainly where people probably know him from.
Yeah, he's
prior to... prior to BoJack, but
he's the sort of guy that I like recognize him when I see him, but I would never know him by his name. You know, it's like, exactly. Oh, that guy.
I was trying to be relevant to the millennials by saying he was in BoJack. Anyway, Tim Robbins, he's the stranger, the guy with the peg leg or whatever. He was, of course, in Shawshank Redemption as what, Dufresne? Something,
yeah.
Andy Dufresne.
Andy, yeah.
And Mystic River is another movie that I haven't seen, but I heard is really good.
Great actor.
Yes.
John C. Reilly. What's that?
I think Tim Robbins is in the movie Bull Durham, too. You guys ever seen that?
Yeah. Yeah, he's in that. Yeah, he's in that as well. Yeah, you're right. John C. Reilly is Sasquatch, and we've talked a lot about John C. Reilly.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, you can see him in Talladega Nights, and you can see him in Walk Hard, Gangs of New York, Step Brothers, you name it. Meatloaf as Meatloaf in the movie. Excuse me. Meatloaf is JP.
I wish.
He's actually Jack Black's dad in the movie. Amy Poehler is the waitress at the truck stop.
Yeah, Colin, that was surprising. I did not expect to see her in the movie. I completely forgot about that.
Not a very happy role for Amy.
No, especially if you binge-watch Parks and Rec. She is exactly the opposite in this role. So,
Colin Hanks as drunk frat dude. And Jason Segel, I don't know how you pronounce that, as frat guy number one.
I got a question for you guys. So when I was watching the movie, I looked through that IMDb, which I'm guessing, Ty, that's where you got the list from, but I couldn't find Jason Segel. I was looking for him, and maybe I missed it, but I could not pick out which drunk frat guy he was.
He's, don't they throw something at KG?
Is he the guy? Yeah, is he the guy that throws like the red solo cup?
I was going to say that's Colin Hanks, but Jason is up. I think Jason's up standing on the porch when that's happening.
Oh, okay.
So
quick cameo, probably.
Yeah, I think the only reason he's probably mentioned is because after this movie, he became more famous.
Yeah.
Amy Adams is the gorgeous woman. She's in the bar scene where they're playing Master Exploder, and she mouths to Jack Black that she loves him.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And then Fred Armisen is security guard number one. I think he was smoking a joint or something like that.
He's the one with the mustache, yeah.
Yeah. So, now that we've got kind of your background, your cameos, and your cast in there, I'm going to just take you on a sweet, sensual journey of plot.
I'm very excited.
So we'll start out...
Sign me up.
We will start with some plot, and then I'll break it up to ask some questions from our esteemed co-hosts today. As a young man, JB, Jack Black, he runs away from his religious family, an oppressive Midwestern town for Hollywood. So basically the movie starts off with, it's a very young Jack Black, and let me just say that the actor they got to play young Jack Black is like on the money.
So good.
He looks a lot like him. And this is where you see Meatloaf and the rest of Jack Black's family. And they're very a devout religious family. But Jack Black is, even as a young kid, he's really into rock and roll. He has a poster of Dio, and he has various other rock and roll and heavy metal posters. Does anybody remember off the top of their head what he has posters of?
Oh, man. I know Queen's in there.
Yeah, he had a Queen. I think he had AC/DC.
I think you're right.
He had a Dio poster.
Yeah.
Definitely. I don't know if he had a Eddie Van Halen poster or if that was just a scene in the movie that showed Eddie Van Halen, but
regardless,
Regardless,
he's a fan. And his dad gets mad at him because I guess it's kind of like being played in musical form at this point. Kickapoo kind of kicks off the movie. And, it's a long ass fucking time ago in a town called Kickapoo. And when young Jack Black stands up to the kitchen table and he plays that song about slicing a dragon's balls or slicing his cockles with his long and shiny blade, that's when Meatloaf gets pissed and he joins the musical and basically spanks young Jack Black and rips down all his posters. And the door, he slams the door shut, and the only poster left is a poster of Dio. And Dio inspires young Jables to essentially run away and go to Hollywood and pursue his quest for rock and roll. And he goes to the wrong Hollywood.
A few wrong Hollywoods, I think.
Several of them, yeah.
He makes it takes him forever to get there because essentially, or he's like a little kid when he leaves, but he's like an adult when he finally gets there.
He's like 30-year-old Jack Black by the time he arrives in Hollywood. He's like 12.
Yeah, so yeah, it's taken him years.
Yeah, he basically goes from Kickapoo, Missouri, I think it was, to like the Carolinas, down to Florida, and then across the country to Hollywood, California, finally after like seven stops.
So, and what must have been years of, yeah, I don't know, contemplating or something.
A lot of time had passed since then.
So anyway, it's kind of like a prophecy that Dio lays before him, that he will go, he'll form a strong alliance in the world's most awesome bad. And he finally gets to LA or Hollywood, whatever, the right place. And he sees KG, Kyle Gass. He sees his play, his character playing guitar out on the street. And he's got some long hair that you're not used to seeing from KG. And he's playing the acoustic guitar pretty well for money on the street.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, Jack Black is kind of entranced by KG, and he's kind of worshiping him as a rock god because of the skills he has and his attitude. And he wants KG to teach him rock and roll lessons, but KG refuses and is kind of annoyed and put off by Jack Black. So we'll pause there and we'll ask the question. What's the overall impression of this movie? Let's start with Mark.
So a little background. This was actually only my second time seeing this movie. I'm familiar with a lot of Tenacious D's work, but as far as just watching the movie, this is my second time, and I hadn't seen it in several years. So a lot of the stuff was new to me, which was, it made it even better. I thought it was a very enjoyable movie. It's a solid laugh. I think it's a good comedy. I don't think it's like a great all-time comedy, but The Pick of Destiny is like aimed at a particular audience, right? They're aimed at an audience like very similar to us, right? Like if you're a rock and roll nerd or a metal head, like it's a must watch for you, right? But this movie isn't going to win any like special awards, obviously. Okay. But I enjoyed it. I had a good laugh. I think it's a movie where, you know, you don't have to sit down and think about the plot line or anything. You can sit down, just have a good laugh. And I would imagine that it caters to stoners quite well.
All right, Michael, what do you think?
So I have seen this movie more than I think this is probably my 10th time seeing this movie. I love this movie. It's one of my like favorite movies to reminisce about and talk to friends about, since a lot of the people that I know and talk to have seen this movie, know a lot of the songs and stuff from it. And like Mark was saying, it's like obviously it obviously comes from a place of love. Like Tenacious D loves like rock music, right? So many of the jokes and subtleties are like very much catered towards people that have like prior knowledge coming in, which is something that, you know, is not commonly found in these sorts of movies. So, I love it. It's one of my favorites.
You know, can I add one quick thing too? I think like what Michael was saying, is right, where, there's so many inside jokes within the Tenacious D universe, whereas like another Jack Black movie, and this isn't the same movie at all, but like you take School of Rock, right? Another Jack Black rock movie. Like I can take my mom to go see School of Rock, and she's not interested in rock music that much, but she's probably going to like School of Rock. If she went to see The Pick of Destiny, she'd be like, what? You know, so it's more of like an inside joke, I think. Yeah.
Yep, totally.
You know,
and I would say that the way that Tenacious D crafts music is in a way that somewhat parodies our favorite things about rock and roll, but also they just make really good songs at the same time.
They do.
They're memorable, and The Pick of Destiny, you know, they released Rise of the Phoenix, the album after this, and they kind of, one of the first things they say in Rise of the Phoenix, the title song off that album is, When the Pick of Destiny was released, it was a bomb. And all the critics said that the D was done. So the thing about it, though.
That was beautiful, by the way.
Thank you.
This is lovely.
That's from years of years of being a Tennessee fan.
You have definitely sang that alone in your car more than 10,000 times.
So basically, this was perceived as a bomb, and I think Tenacious D, I think Jack Black and Kyle Gass took this hard because they clearly put their hearts and souls into this movie, and maybe they were expecting it to be maybe not like this global hit, but at least to make back, maybe to make like 50 million on it or something, and they didn't. You know, they made like almost 14 million, which is pretty bad, all things considered.
So I was wondering about this too when you were talking about this, about like how much money it, you know, made and didn't make in the box office. I'm assuming it was just a passion project, and they had to like, did they have to like fight to get it made, or did a studio actually want them to make it? You know, did they have to like push to get it made, or did they have to like, do they like, or were they asked to get it made?
My guess is they had a pretty small, I mean, realistically, a pretty small budget, like what? 20, whatever I said, 20 million or something.
Yeah, 20.
It was 20 million their budget, which is pretty small for like a movie that gets produced by a studio, I guess. Mm-hmm. And what I'm thinking, it was a passion project, and what kind of proves some of that is that Jack Black took a pay cut. But I'm guessing that the studio made it because they just had faith in Jack Black as a star to really drive it forward. Wasn't this New Line Cinema? I mean, yeah, this was.
It was distributed by New Line. It was produced by Red Hour Production, which is operated by Ben Stiller.
So, I mean, it's definitely a passion project, right? It's just that's why the budget is what it is, and what have you. But I'm assuming that they just thought the star power of Jack Black and Tenacious D being kind of a known entity, that it would make more money.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, though, I never viewed this movie as a bomb. I always thought this is a great movie. I think it's hilarious. Obviously, it's catered to a particular audience. But this movie and these songs are what got me into Tenacious D. I mean, they gained a fan by releasing this movie. And even though I had listened to Tribute and Fuck Her Gently and Kielbasa, Wonder Boy, all the songs off their first album, it was really this album that solidified me as a Tenacious D fan and made me go back and listen to their first album.
Yeah, the soundtrack really sells it. And it's similar to Flight of the Conchords in that way, even though it's an entirely different style of comedy, but they kind of rope you in with their musical genius and their songwriting and just the whole soundtracks of their TV shows. And I guess you said earlier, their HBO specials and then the movie. And that's how I heard about The Pick of Destiny originally when it came out, was through like Tribute and their soundtrack. So.
And I would agree with you guys. I think it's just I said some of this already. It's just a really chill and enjoyable movie for fans of rock and roll. It's if you like Tenacious D or Jack Black's style of humor, you're going to like this. If you're a fan of rock and roll, I don't see why you wouldn't like this. It's very laid back. And like Mark said, it's, I mean, it does kind of cater to stoners too.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. If you're a fan of rock and roll at all, this is an absolute must see.
And if you have like some sense of humor.
Yeah. Right. That's important.
And if you like to smoke marijuana, that too. I would highly encourage it.
Yep, exactly. So let's jump back into the plot here. So later in the night, so we just had JB trying to convince Cage to give him some lessons. Later in that night, very sad and mopey JB, he kind of sits on a park bench and he feels defeated. And seconds before being beaten by some knockoffs of the like the droogs from Clockwork Orange, well, he essentially does get kind of the shit kicked out of him.
Yeah.
And definitely. He's being like essentially curb stomped. And then KG walks out because he feels bad for JB. And And as they're running away, Cage yells at him saying, like, yeah, don't come back, or whatever he says. And because of this, JB thinks that he fought these guys off, but in reality, he did. And this kind of is the beginning of KG's manipulation of JB, where now JB thinks that he owes KG something because KG saved his life. But in reality, he just waited for the guys to run away, and then he kind of snuck out there and reintroduced himself to JB. Is that kind of how you guys viewed that?
Yes.
Exactly.
Yep. So anyway, KG feeds JB's fantasy by pretending to be famous off of his band called the Kyle Gass Project. He's saying that he's played with like Dio, and he's played with all these people, and he really exploits JB into cleaning his house and like buying him weed, and all under the guise that JB can audition for his fictitious band if he does all this stuff for him. So, and I think this is like, this almost gets unraveled when JB is cleaning or something like that, and he finds a check that says, I love you, Pumpkin.
Mm-hmm.
And it's for $200. KG writes it off as it was a hit song he wrote that was big in Canada or something like that.
Royalty check.
Yeah, it's a royalty check, basically. That being said, you're telling me he's getting by off $200? I guess it's the 90s.
I guess rent was cheap. I don't know. He lived in a pretty shitty apartment, but he was like on like the.
They're in like, LA though.
The I LA mean, like boardwalk.
No, there's no way. Yeah.
Yeah. I was kind of surprised how he was able to score weed, pay rent, and eat. But I guess he's playing guitar all day. I don't know.
Yeah. He's busking on the street. So I suppose that gives him a little bit of cash, but not enough to make a living.
There's a lot of pretty funny moments. Just like of him teaching JB, like when he's holding the remote and he's like, try to snatch it. And he tries to grab the remote away from Jack Black tries to grab the remote away from KG, and teaching him about the power slide, which KG says is the most powerful move in a rocker's or a guitarist's arsenal. Do you guys agree with that? Is the power slide the most powerful move?
I don't know. Maybe. It's not the.
I think it's right.
I don't really think about it. Like, I don't know. Maybe back in the day, it seems kind of lame now, right?
I mean, I love me some stage antics. I think the power slide is right up there. Be completely honest with me, okay? After that scene, I have a hardwood floor in my apartment, and I thought I was wearing some wind pants. And I'm like, I might try power sliding. Like I was like 95% there. And then I remembered I have the knees of like an 82-year-old man and elected against it. But how close did you guys come to power sliding?
Every time I see that, I really want to try it, but I was wearing shorts at the time. It seems painful.
Right. I always think that it looks like the way JB does it. I'm like, ooh, that looks like that would hurt.
Yeah, I definitely, like, I envisioned, because I slide across my floor all the time. I'm doing it right now, as a matter of fact. But I...
Are you power sliding right now?
Well, not power sliding. I'm just sliding. Feet sliding.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just gliding more so. Got across it. The floor. But I envisioned myself planting on my knees and just falling face first.
Yeah.
Down. One more thing I was going to mention about the power slide, because it's got me thinking. I don't know if you guys remember this or not, but if you don't, and listeners at home, if you don't remember this either, YouTube it. There was a Super Bowl about 10 years ago. I think it was the Super Bowl with the Steelers and the Cardinals. Springsteen did the halftime show, and they had a camera like right on the level of the ground, or like the stage rather. And Springsteen did a power slide across the stage, but he slid too far and his crotch went like right into the camera. The camera like wiggled everywhere and whatnot. You guys remember that?
No, I don't.
No.
Oh my God. You got to look it up. It's hilarious.
I would say that another move that's pretty powerful, but maybe not as powerful as the power slide, is the windmill, to play your guitar and windmill.
Oh, hell yeah.
I was thinking like maybe like the floor, the spinning on the floor, like Angus Young of AC/DC does.
Oh, yep.
Yep, or playing the guitar behind your back.
That's a good one.
That's a good one. That's a classic. I think the windmill is made popular by Pete Townshend of The Who, and Eddie Vedder does it a lot when he plays. I'll throw in another one. My favorite stage antic is when they throw the guitar in the air and then catch it and come back down and keep jamming. That's a good one.
That's
risky.
Oh, very risky. Yes.
Very risky. Yeah.
I would say the most powerful move in a rocker's arsenal, strictly because there's so much risk that comes into play with it, has already been done, and anybody who ever tries to do it will just be a cheap imitator, is when Jimi Hendrix lit his guitar on fire.
Yeah.
I think that's the most powerful move you can do, because your guitar is done after that. And I just don't think it can ever be done again to the same awesomeness that Jimi Hendrix did it.
Yeah.
But that being said, the power slide is right up there. So,
that's
KG's not wrong to say that. Yeah.
No.
Another thing that I think KG introduces around this time is a cock push-up.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah,
and
of course.
I'm sure that you did not get the yearning to do a cock.
I did not.
So, as KG puts it, a cock push-up is basically lifting yourself off the ground using nothing but your cock, and that is not possible.
Yeah, if I was capable of doing it, I definitely would have thought about it, but did not cross my mind.
Well, sex is a crucial component to the Kyle Gass Project, as the Rage Cage puts it.
And I think he says something along the lines of, you never know when you're going to need to fuck your way out of a tight spot, or something like that.
It was foreshadowing a moment later on, though.
Well, I was going to say, of these things are foreshadowing. The power slide is a foreshadow, and so is the cock push-up. So anyway, eventually, KG sets up the gig simulator, which is amazing. And also kind of shows that KG is pretty crazy and pretty devoted to this lie that he's created.
Yes.
So devoted that he creates a gig simulator specifically for Jack Black, but making it seem like he's used this on other people. Maybe he has, maybe he hasn't, but pretty interesting. So the gig simulator is basically KG sitting in the back row of a bunch of chairs, and then there's fake people, like paper plate people.
Mm-hmm.
Is that kind of what they are?
Yeah, they're paper plate faces.
And they're all frowning, and then he has like a tape recorder that he presses play, and it just says like really rude things, basically. And Jack has to go up there and play his set, and he's got Monster Mash, and he's playing Monster Mash is his guitar, which is also I know it's not iconic in rock and roll, but for like people who are fans, it's a pretty iconic guitar. So he's got Monster Mash, he's got like a helmet on, and he's basically playing a set. And while he's doing this, KG is pressing that button, so there's negative feedback. The paper plate people sitting in the chairs are all frowning. And then there's a button he can press, or whatever he pressed, where the beer like hits him in the head.
Yeah, he's got like beer bottles on strings that fly into JB's face and like break on his helmet, which is a great helmet, by the way. It's like the single bar kicker helmet.
Yeah.
And the pizza guy comes to watch, actually. And this is pizza. The pizza guy's name is Lee, and the actor's name is J.R. Reed. And he comes in with the Zaw. And he wants to stay and watch the show, and this adds more pressure to JB. And basically, JB bombs the gig simulator. He does not do very well. He tries to save himself with a power slide, and like Mark foreshadowed, he does the power slide, but he falls flat on his face and he breaks Monster Mash.
Exactly how I envisioned it in my apartment. Yeah,
and he starts crying like a baby, basically. And saying that he broke Monster Mash, and then KG tries to comfort him, saying, you know, it took me a couple times to pass the gig simulator, which is a lie, KG, because you just made this up now. But anyway, this leads to eventually JB finds out that the Rage Cage has been lying to him all along, because there's a message that's left on the voicemail from his mom's, and she ends it by saying, "I love you, Pumpkin." Did I miss anything in there, Key, that you guys wanted to talk about?
No, that pretty much hits the formation of their relationship.
Yeah, so he finds out that KG is basically unemployed and he's living off his parents. And this puts the two of them now on equal footing, because now KG can't lord over him saying, you know, I know what I'm talking about, I'm a famous musician. They're both trying to grind, basically, to make it. So before they actually, I guess, split or break up, KG puts out a guitar and says, you know, that he bought that for Jables on completion of the gig simulator. So this kind of helps win JB back, because this is around when JB had just learned that the Rage Cage was living off his parents. And the Rage Cage is ready to just deuce out after that. He's like, I got to go home. I can't afford to live like this anymore. If they're not going to send me money, I'm going to go live with them. And at this moment, Jables emotional because KG had just given him a brand new guitar, which is badass, by the way.
It's like an acoustic Gibson SG with like custom inlays on the fretboard. It's awesome.
How did he afford that?
I have no idea. There's no way that was less more than 200, or no way that it was that $200 rent check that paid for that whole thing.
How does he afford to live at all? Like honestly, he has enough.
There's a plot hole.
He has $200 for rent, but like even little things, like the fact that he's ordering a pizza, that's $20 right there. He has to be eating ramen noodles or something all the time. He can't order pizzas.
When you're living like that. And he's buying weed. I mean,
yeah, that's not cheap. I mean,
so they're definitely, you have to suspend your belief for that part of the movie, because it really makes no sense how KG is living so comfortably. Because I mean, he's clearly well fed. Now, that being said, he spends the rest of the rent check on this really expensive guitar that probably at least is like between $800 to $1,000. Anyway, JB says, you know, no, you're not going to go to your parents. We're going to form a band, and we're going to name the band Tanakh. And then it's revealed that KG's like, why are we calling it Tanakh? And then JB's like, I have ass mark. And he shows him, I think, I don't know, it's probably his right cheek for it to make sense.
Yep.
It's his right cheek, and it says like Tanakh. And then KG says that he too has ass mark, and his ass mark says USD, basically. And they put their cheeks together, and the pizza guy, Lee, is like, guys, look. And then basically it says Tenacious D. Their ass mark spells out Tenacious D.
I have ass mark too.
So it's pretty much destiny, just like Dio said.
That's like the unity of Tenacious D right there.
So at this point in the movie now, Tenacious D is a real thing. JB and KG are on equal footing, and we're kind of past the point, kind of past that mechanic in the movie where JB is kind of being manipulated by KG. So let's swing it over to another question. What is your guys's, what's your favorite scene of this movie? And if we're going to get to it, I mean, have we got to it yet? Maybe I'll ask another one. Have we got to either of your guys' favorite scenes?
My favorite scene is coming up, and that's the, when we were talking, when they talked to Ben Stiller at Guitar Center to learn about the pick.
Okay, sure. So we'll get to that.
That's definitely
my favorite scene. My favorite scene has not happened yet. Though I did write down a couple, but one of them was the blow your mind scene with Amy Adams. I did enjoy that one, but not my favorite. But my other one's also coming as well.
Okay, so let's just go back to a little plot. Okay, we'll introduce a little more plot, then I'll go back to the questions. So basically, now they're a band. So they start playing gigs, and this is where we get introduced to the open mic guy, who's played by Paul F. Tompkins. And, you know, he reads off the card like, this is the greatest fucking band. And he's like, they asked me to read this. And they go out there and they play their first gig, which is pretty good. But they want to get better, and they don't know how, and they want to reach the, you know, because that's where Jack Black says, "It was good. It was awesome compared to bullshit." And they decide that there's something that these other rock and roll legends have that they don't have. And JB is looking at all these magazines of, like, what is it, Rolling Stone, or what is he?
Yeah.
Yep.
For some reason, they have all these issues of Rolling Stone that happen to have all these people on it. And he notices that there's this deep, dark secret of rock and roll that all the rock legends use the same guitar pick. So they basically end up going to the Guitar Center, right? To, like, question. Yep.
Yeah, because they want to get a pick like that. They're just like, well, let's go get the pick. They didn't assume there was anything, you know, anything afoot. They were just like, well, let's get picks like that and we'll be good.
Yeah, there you go. So that's what brings them to the Guitar Center. And like I said, this is just how this movie functions, is that it's a very fateful movie, because Jack Black had to leave his home, as Dio suggested, so he could meet KG, who also had Assmark, that spelled out Tenacious D. And then they also had to go to the right Guitar Center to meet the right Guitar Center guy to learn about the pick of destiny. So they end up going to the Guitar Center, and they learn from Ben Stiller's character, who is just Guitar Center guy. And I got to say that Ben Stiller looks pretty great in his role.
He does.
He's got long, frizzy hair and, like, mutton chops.
It's great big glasses.
He looks pretty, like, weathered, I guess is good. He looks like a roadie, pretty much.
Yeah, yep.
And what, they show him a picture of the pick, don't they, or something like that?
Yeah, yeah, it's like a picture of, like, Angus Young or something. They're like, we want a pick like this.
And then he gets really cagey. Guitar Center guy, Ben Stiller's character. And he's like, who told you about this? And then they go in a private room, and with, like, one light, and they turn the light on or whatever. And he tells them about the pick of destiny and the fact that it has some powers. And I'm not going to say too much because I don't want to spoil Michael's favorite scene. So they talk about the powers of it. And Ben Stiller's character goes on to tell them that the pick of destiny was created by a dark wizard from a piece of Satan's tooth as a gift to a blacksmith who saved his life from the great demon. So it provides the holder unnatural abilities with string instruments. So what's your favorite part? Why do you like this scene so much, Michael? Let's address that.
I think it's just, like, Ben Stiller and the way, just, like, in general, his character is, yeah, where he gets, like, really suspicious, like, who told you about this? How'd you learn about the pick of destiny? And even like little stupid shit, like where he's taking them into the back of Guitar Center, and, like, right before they go in the closet, he's like, in here. When he, like, the way he points with, like, a rock fist with the horns, you know?
yeah.
He's like, just that entire story about him, like, he learned about the pick, found some sort of transcript, but he had to go to, like, he quit his job. Went to Rome, learned Latin. He's like, why not get a translator and let him read it too?
Yeah, and I like his supernatural.
Yes, it's like a level above super.
So, you know, I agree.
He's a very mysterious man too, and, like, I think it's so funny how he wants everything to be low key, and then they get in that room and he's like, and, you know, Kyle or someone turns on the light. He's like, come on, guys, like you're ruining my moment. He does something like that. It's just, that just cracked me up.
It's also funny that he just decides, you know, he's been on this quest forever, but then he's like, it's in the Rock and Roll History Museum, basically. The last known location was, like, isn't it Angus Young's guitar pick or something?
Yeah.
That's like the last known, and it's been retired in the Rock and Roll History Museum. I don't know why Angus would not still have it, considering AC/DC is still touring, but that's what we are led to believe by a Guitar Center guy. I don't know why he gave up on his quest. Does he say why he gave? Why didn't he go? Because it's impossible. It's impossible to go to the Rock and Roll History Museum.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. It's an impenetrable fortress. Basically,
it's a feat. It's a feat no man can achieve.
He just can't. Okay. He can't do it. He's not capable of breaking into the Rock and Roll History Museum.
So he definitely provides them all the key information they need. So that's good. So basically, they become infatuated with the idea of stealing the Pick of Destiny from the Rock History Museum. It's not the Hall of Fame, right? They changed it on purpose.
I was gonna say, I wonder if they couldn't.
What isn't
like,
isn't
get the rights or something like?
Isn't the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in like Ohio?
It's in Cleveland.
And this is in they're like in Sacramento. They go to Sacramento.
Right. Is there an actual Rock History Museum, or are they just trying to knock off the Hall of Fame in Ohio? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No, I'm guessing it's like the Hall of Fame. Ty, haven't you been to the Hall of Fame?
I have.
Was it anything cool. Was it anything like the movie?
I wish it was. I wish it is cool, but it's there's not that stairway to, you know, the stairway to heaven or whatever.
What was that thing called with all the? Anyways.
Yeah, it's actually it's not a real location.
No. So they become infatuated with this idea that they want to steal the pick, and they decide that they basically need to borrow the pizza guy's car for a few days, and along the way they stop at that truck stop, and this is where we meet Amy Poehler's character and the cameo, and she's got like a bruise on her eye, and that's not funny. She's apparently in an abusive relationship, but she does pretty well here as for how small the role is, and it's kind of when they're there, Jack is very focused on, you know, the blueprint for sneaking into the Rock and Roll History Museum, and KG is more focused on the smoking hot babes that are randomly at this truck stop.
Yep.
Now,
like this filthy rundown truck stop.
Now, for some reason, they're interested in KG, and they're immediately buying that they're getting inducted to the Hall of Fame. They ask no questions about what band he's been in, but they're buying it. And yep. KG is basically all in on this, and he's kind of over the whole rock and roll history thing and breaking in and stealing the pick. But Jables is very focused on it still. And this is where he runs into Tim Robbins' character, the Stranger, who hobbles in on his peg leg, walking slow and mysteriously with long hair and gross teeth, and I think he's wearing like gloves or something.
He's got like fingerless gloves.
Fingerless gloves, yeah. Fingerless
and
gloves.
Like in an overcoat. And what is that accent he has?
It's just some like garbage Eastern European accent. I'm not really sure if it's anything specific. It's kind of like Russian, but not really, like Russian or Polish or something.
The Rock and Roll History Museum.
Rock and Roll History Museum.
History Museum. And he basically deduces that Jack Black wants to sneak into the Rock and Roll History Museum. And he knows a way in. And it's through like the air ducts. But the way he tells, like, Jack Black gets creeped out by this guy. He goes into the bathroom. The guy follows him into the bathroom. And like outside the door is saying, like, well, if you were to break into the Rock and Roll History Museum. And he tells him about the air vents or whatever. And he guesses that he's like, are you after the Pick of Destiny? And when he says this, Jack Black like shits, which cracks me up every time.
Oh, just comes out. Just some classic toilet humor.
Yeah. Yeah. Which gets me every time. It's like I could be 10 years old and find that funny, and I can be 40 years old and find that funny. It does not matter.
Yeah. Just certain things like a fart at the right time is just always funny. And that's like that was just perfect timing on him releasing that shit.
Yeah, and I should mention that that my favorite scene was when they're both like they're kind of in that circle and they're playing songs like Jables and KG, and they're trying to write a masterpiece, and Jack Black is like, quit judging yourself, you're judging yourself, that's why that riff sucks. And I just love that, because that's so like if you've ever written music, it's kind of close or on the money to when you're trying too hard to write a good song, it usually doesn't work. You're forcing it, and it's funny because
it's kind of like when you start up anything, you have the mindset of like, oh, it's going to be great. But like, you know, we start this podcast like, oh, like if we started this podcast, we're like, oh, we're gonna have 3 million subscribers in the next month. You know, they're just like these two random dudes. Just let's just write a masterpiece. You know, like it's just funny to me that they like are trying to write a masterpiece when you don't really know that like when it's gonna be a masterpiece. You know what I mean? That just sort of happens. You don't know when you're writing it that, oh, this is going to be a masterpiece. You know, that's kind of left off to everyone else too, to decide. But
And it's funny because when they actually do start jamming pretty well, they realize that they forgot to hit record, which is also pretty like, I've had that happen before, you know, like some kind of magic happens. You get on the same wavelength, but then you forget to record it or you forget what the riff even was. So I just thought that was a funny scene of the Rage Cage trying really hard to play and Jable, you know, it's just not working out basically. The chemistry with that song is not working. And I thought that was done really well. Also, I think there's a part where he has like that recorder again and he's like, if you feel something, just let it go. And like, is that when KG farts? Like, it's like, oh, I thought I felt something.
You might be thinking of a deleted scene.
I think I'm thinking of a deleted scene, but I like that deleted scene. So anyway, but yeah, like I said, when Jack Black is saying like, stop judging yourself. I love that part. So anyway, let's fast forward back to this here. So the stranger basically tells Jables that he knows how to get in. So that's when Jables is like, okay, let me wipe. And then he gives him like the blueprint for the ducts, right? Or the air vents or whatever. And he's convinced to tell KG that he knows the way in and this is how they're going to do it. But KG's not having it because he's like, there's these attractive girls over there. And Jables gives him the ultimatum of tits or destiny. And KG lifts up his shirt and says, tits. So they have their split. And are we getting to the part like, what is the motivation for the stranger again? He also wants the pick of destiny, right?
Yeah, he wants it.
And I think he's tried before, you know, and that's why he has the blueprint. The blueprint is like just a sticky note with two squares on it.
Well, it's like
an arrow pointing down like to the right one. You
know? Like two air ducts right next to each other and there's an arrow on the right one. It's like go on this one.
It's that one. Yeah, and I think he's tried it before, which obviously that's why he has the blueprint and everything. But yes, I think his intention is he secretly deep down still wants the pick of destiny. But as we learn, he's very hobbled and he's not very mobile, which does not bode well for him.
Right. So basically he wants Jables to do the dirty work.
Yeah.
I have the quote that the stranger says here. He says, I had it, the pick of destiny. I had it clutched in my fingers, but then I tripped, set off a laser. A security door came down on my leg. I would break in again if I still had my leg. Oh, man. Oh, I do miss that sweet-ass leg of mine.
That sweet-ass leg. So, you know, this is... Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know what's great about Tim Robbins? And, you mentioned he's in this, like, Shawshank Redemption and everything, and I just love it when serious A-list actors just let loose for a little bit and just be something completely stupid.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why shows like SNL and just even all the late night shows you think of, that's why they're so iconic and that's why they're so popular, is because you get these A-list super serious actors that normally never let loose, even though Tim Robbins probably lets loose here and there in other roles like Bull Durham, but it's like he's just ridiculous in this movie, like with that stupid ass accent and his sweet ass leg, you know. It's
I love it. It's like classic, like he purposely like overacted, I think.
Yeah.
You know, made his character ridiculous. So anyway, that leads us to the split. So they both split up, and KG's at this party and dancing super white, I might add.
Yep, and, terrible dancer. Yes.
Yep. And JB is eating mushrooms and depressed. So we get two kind of cut scenes that are going on where JB gets super high from the mushrooms. He goes on a trip, and it's a pretty awesome trip, I would say.
Where you should mention eats. these are mushrooms like out in the wild too, right? Aren't they like just growing?
Yeah, he's basically he decides to basically leave the truck stop on foot to the Rock and Roll History Museum. And he must like want to cut through the woods, I think. And he takes a little break and he's eating like wild grown mushrooms. And he eats enough of them, he starts to trip. And then he runs into Sasquatch, which is played by John C. Reilly.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a very friendly Sasquatch. And then Jables gets to be, you already are my little baby Sam. So then he's like a little baby Sasquatch. And the outfits they have are hilarious to me because it's basically just like their faces are still like visible, but they just put like some makeup or like a little hair like on John C. Reilly. But Jack Black looks ridiculous. It's like this little Sasquatch.
He looks like a little child.
Yeah.
He does. And John C. Reilly looks like he went to Party City and got like a lion or like Kurt, like the Wizard of Oz lion, like a Halloween costume. And they just painted his face. Like that's what his Sasquatch looks like. Which I'm sure it was purposely done that way, and I applaud them for that, because that just made it even better.
And so it kind of cuts back to Jables being Jables in his trip where he thinks he's with Sasquatch, and Jables in real life where he's like climbing up a dangerous tree and like he's like flowing down a river. And he's still singing. Like I like when they cut like where he's on John C. Reilly's back and they do the song Papanego, which is like I guess the trippy ass song of this album, where he's like, that Yeti is my papa and he wants to protect me. But I like when they're like, you know, he's on the back of John C. Reilly and he's like proudly singing this song, mm-hmm. and then they cut to him not on John C. Reilly's back and he's like singing out of tune and
like laying on a tree.
Yeah,
basically, isn't he?
He's up in a branch. Like
yeah, he's like sweating and drooling or whatever. So it's pretty excellent. And when John C. Reilly has Jack Black do like the roar, like a Sasquatch. Oh, it cracks me up so much because like,
I don't know how he made that noise. I don't know how he possibly made that noise.
Yeah, it's like I don't know why, but that gets me every time too. Honestly, one of my favorite scenes in the movie. And at the same time, KG is at the party. Again, don't know why these women are even interested in him in the first place. And again, I don't know why he got invited to this party. But anyway,
well, this is the second time he's lied about being like in an extremely well-regarded and famous rock band. Yeah, because he lied to JB about that, and then now he's lying to these.
Maybe he's just really way better at it than we're giving him credit for.
Yeah, he's a smooth talker. I think that's all that can be said there. So they eventually get him to go up on the stage, and they have, you know, they announce like, we have a Rock and Roll History inductee or Hall of Fame inductee, whatever. He's going to play one of his songs, and he's like, I don't have a guitar, which is a good almost save, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But then being at a college party, some douchebag's got to have an acoustic guitar. So they bring one up to the front, and he tries to play. I can't remember what song he tries to play.
A History of Tenacious D, because he only knows like the backing vocals.
Yeah, so he only plays like the backing vocals, and almost immediately people realize this guy sucks by himself, and they kick it to the DJ who starts playing music, and he basically gets kicked out of the party. And that's when you can kind of see Colin Hanks, who throws like the solo cup at him. And I think you should be able to say Jason Segel like in that scene up on the porch or something like that. So that's kind of the break there. Let's kick it to another question here. So what's your guys' favorite cameo in this movie? Let's start with Michael, actually.
Man, I think I gotta go with Tim Robbins. I think that character is just so good and like it really rounds out the movie for me. Having that character and just tons of good lines, just all the reasons we talked about earlier, where he's like a really good actor, but he's like in this ridiculous role, overacting. Accent is terrible, but also like great and hilarious and tons of great lines.
What about you, Mark?
Yeah, the like I mentioned earlier, this is my second time watching it, so I think the first time I saw this movie, I probably didn't know a lot of the people, like a lot of the actors in the movie, or not as many as I do now. So the cameos are really what made a lot of the movie for me, because I'd be like, oh, that's Amy Poehler. Oh, that's, you know, Meatloaf, Dio, whatever. I mean, you guys know me, though. I mean, Dave Grohl was my favorite cameo. He's like one of my favorite human beings ever. But I saw like a little behind the scenes thing on YouTube, and this was his first acting role. And I feel like for his first acting role, he did a really, really great job with it. And it's just funny to see him in like all that makeup and just looking absolutely ridiculous. And I think musically too, that final showdown song just kicks ass. And it's nice to see him back on the kit, and just, it was I thought he was funny. I thought he did a really great job. And whether he did or not, I think he probably got a lot more respect from that. I don't know, just from like a lot of other people being in that role. And I think like that sort of elevated his likability status, I guess, if you can call it that. Dave would definitely be, I think Dave was mine for sure.
I wonder how long it took to get that makeup on.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, because I didn't know right away that it was him, because he's in the tribute music video, right?
Yeah.
So, correct me if I'm wrong, but is tributes before the Pick of Destiny movie?
Yes.
Yep. Correct. Yep. So, just briefly, my history of enjoying Dave Grohl, aside from just enjoying the Foo Fighters music, is when the Learn to Fly music video came out. I don't know if you've ever seen that music video, but Dave, and I think it's two of the other members in the band, basically, they only had three members at that time, but they basically like did this Eddie Murphy thing where they were just every single character on this plane flight. And it was really funny. And I was like 7 or 8 years old. It's like, oh, that guy's really funny. And the second thing I remember him doing, really, aside from his music, was being the devil in Tenacious D. So it just, I don't know. My man crush on him just grew a lot during Tenacious D. This is a Pick of Destiny, but
probably enough that you could have done a cock push up. I think mine's Ben Stiller. For the same reasons Michael had mentioned, I think he just like, he nails that part. And we've already talked about it ad nauseum. So, but I think my favorite line is definitely, and let him read it too.
great. He, you know, another one that's good. We just talked about this, but I completely forgot John C. Reilly was Sasquatch, and I just thought it was really ironic that he was in this movie, and it just happened to, you know, he was the main subject of our previous playback, Walk Hard: The Dewey Cox Story, which you should check out, by the way, if you have not. Listeners at home, but that cameo really stood out to me too. But we've already talked about that.
Yeah, he did excellent. So keep going.
One more cameo that was like my very close second was Amy Poehler, only because she's got like two dialogue exchanges in the entire movie, and they're both like really funny. She does the money exchange, right? As she's like the waitress at the diner, and she's talking to the girls that KG is talking to, and they get their check. And I think one of the girls is like, "Are we getting charged for all the refills?" And Amy Poehler is like, you know, she's deadpan, like dead inside. She's like, "No, you're so pretty, you get everything for free."
That was a great line.
And I like how KG says, like, "Wow, that's a pretty good deal."
So yeah, that's my Amy Poehler is my close second.
Yeah, she did a good job. Okay, so back to the plot. So basically what happens is after the trip, basically after Jables is done tripping, he ends up basically at the Rock and Roll History Museum, right? I mean, pretty much he stumbles into it, doesn't he?
Yeah, isn't the
I'm asking this for double check. I'm pretty sure that's what happens, but I'm not.
I think he stumbles into it, and I don't know if this is before or after the forest scene, but there was a sign, literally a sign that said Rock and Roll History Museum, like 1 mile.
Yeah, away. Sure.
And then I think he goes into the forest, and then he stumbles into it.
So quickly after he has his trip, he's done tripping, he gets to the Rock and Roll History Museum. And this is where they play one of my favorite songs that's like lesser known by Tenacious D, which is Stone the Gate, which is pretty funny because he's like trying to sneak around and like do all these moves to like avoid being seen. I just love that.
Song. He's singing, like, as he sings, everything that he's singing is also like happening. He's like, oh, there's a camera.
Cut in the bushes. That was also one of my favorite songs. That song is called Breakin' City, followed, you'll get to it, but it's Breakin' City followed by Car Chase City. the names of those two songs.
Stone the Gate. Okay. Anyway, so he ends up going in through the vents, like was suggested by the stranger. And while he's in the vents, isn't this where he meets KG?
Yeah, KG also happens to be in the vents.
KG also found out how to get into the vents.
He's like talking to him on a walkie-talkie, isn't he? Or something?
Yes.
And then he shows up just right next to his face.
So, long story short, they end up sneaking through the Rock and Roll History Museum, and the vent just collapses, and this obviously gets the attention of the guard. And what they do is like classic like Scooby-Doo museums stuff where the guard walks by and they're both pretending, like Jack Black's pretending to sing and JB's pretending to play guitar. I'm laughing because like their poses crack me up and I'm thinking about them right now. And the guard walks by and doesn't notice them, even though they're standing on top of the vent that fell. They're literally standing on top of the vent.
I didn't notice that.
So, and he doesn't notice them. And I don't know where they got a microphone or a guitar to pose that way, but it's hilarious.
It's so funny too, because it just pans to all of these iconic rock stars, and then it's just two out of shape fat dudes.
Yep.
With a guitar and mic. It's like
standing on top of a vent.
Yeah. Just fell. They're just sweaty and they look like hobos and just
Well, it's pretty convenient though, right? Because the security guards were just like blazing up in like the CCTV room. You know?
Yeah,
so they're all like they're like tripping balls walking around the museum.
Like I said, there's a reason it's called the Pick of Destiny. It's apparently Tenacious D was not going to be denied this pick. So basically they get through that snafu. And then they have to disarm. They eventually get to like the Stairway to Heaven type stairs. And there's all these iconic guitars on the wall. And then there they see Angus Young's guitar with the pick. But then there's another classic like museum scene where this is more Mission Impossible, where like the red lasers all show up.
Oh, yeah.
And Jack Black gets to bust out some moves to get through the lasers to get to the pick is what he's trying to do. And I love when he's doing that swimming move, like he's doing like a breaststroke or something. Like I was watching him do that, I was like, there's no way his feet aren't hitting the lines.
No, definitely not. No, he set off like a ton of lasers doing that.
And he eventually gets himself stuck somehow. It just kind of cuts to him being like stuck. He's standing. I can't remember if he's standing on one foot or not, but he's standing like in an awkward position. And this is when Cage says, use the cock. And basically he gives himself a boner that pops through his jeans. Yeah. And may I say, Jable's pretty impressive boner.
Very, 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 very shapely.
Yeah. Very shapely boner. And he was pretty far away from that button. So Jack Black was very kind to himself with the funny thing is they had to like, did they have to like CGI a boner for this?
I don't know. Well, yeah, definitely like some sort of prosthetic.
Or rigged it. Anyway, he uses his boner, somewhat a la the cock push-up, I guess, to hit the disarm button and all the lasers go away. And then he's able to get up and grab the pick but doesn't he knock a bunch of shit over, I think, in the process?
Yeah, like, well, because JB gets on top of Cage's shoulders, and then they grab the pick, and then they fall over backwards, knock over a bunch of like amps that like trigger. Then one of the security guards in the CCTV room sees it and then triggers the alarm.
So that's what happens. So they now have to leave, and they're running out, and the security guards are chasing them in hot pursuit, and they do a power slide, under the door as it's closing. So cock push-up and the power slide both come back into play. And after that, they run into the stranger again, don't they? Like right outside the museum.
Yep. Because he's there. He's there to steal the pick of destiny from them.
So they have kind of that standoff, and he's like, I'm going to put your eyes where your balls were, and your balls where your eyes were. And and then they realize that they can just run away. He's got a knife out. They realize they can just run away from him because he doesn't have a gun. And he's like, I'm going to fucking stab you. I love that part. So then he tries to hobble after him, and he's not able to. And he gets arrested, doesn't he?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And then eventually they get back to their car, and then they're being pursued by the police, aren't they? Because they're paranoid at this point, and they're gonna pull KG over because he's got a bum taillight, right?
Yep.
And so they're gonna pull him over. And he gets paranoid thinking they're going to take the pick. So he pretends to pull over, and then he just, hits the throttle, and they speed away. And now they have this like high car speed chase.
Chase City, baby.
Yeah. And it's being like televised, and it's really funny because the pizza guy just happens to be watching TV, and they name the car and his same model and every make and model. And he calls JB and KG, and he's like, hey guys, like, how's it going? They're like just screaming, like obviously they're in this car as he's calling them, but they're trying to play it off like they're not.
They're like at a movie, right? At a drive-in movie.
Yeah. And like he can watch them take every sharp turn like on TV, and as they take the sharp turn they scream, and they're screaming in his ear, and he's like, okay.
The car's going down like flights of stairs at one point too. It's like ridiculous shit. It's just
it's a really bad, really good bad car chase, basically, put it that way.
Yeah.
Just fast forwarding a little bit, they eventually get to this open mic or whatever they were going to play, and they meet the open mic guy again, and they say, here we are, ready to play, we're gonna turn everything that you've ever heard into shit, basically.
Gonna turn your minds into shit.
Yeah, that's what it was. And he's like, okay then. Because I think the first thing he asks is if they have any new material.
Yeah, I actually got a lot of, this is one of my favorite line exchanges, one of my favorite lines in the movie. He goes, we've got one spot left. You guys got any new material? And JB goes, what we've got's gonna turn your brain into shit.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
And then I believe right after that, the open mic host says this line, and Ty, you mentioned earlier how they introduced Tenacious D. This time he says, since the beginning of time, 'twas written in the stones that one day a band would come. Well, that band has come, and now they're here to come again in your ear pussies.
The band comes on stage. Is that in their dream scenario where they're playing Master Exploder?
Is that
a different scene?
The quote that Mark just said was their first gig. And then the quote that you said where he's like, I fucking love this band. That's from the Master Exploder dream.
That's just okay. The dream one. Oh, okay.
So we have those flip-flop.
Yeah, because JB's dreaming about like what life is going to be like after they get the pick.
Oh, yeah, because he's like, that's right. Fucking love this band.
I did not mean to blow away your mind.
That
song.
All the time. Yeah, it's great. Because he's wearing the pick around his neck. Mm-hmm. So anyway, and that's back. We didn't really mention that through the plot, but that's back when he's imagining like like Michael said, that's when he's imagining what it would be like to play with the pick of destiny. So, and then that features Kyle Gass playing on the guitar that has like the women's legs spread open.
That's right.
Yep.
And
each leg is a fretboard.
Yeah, doesn't they have like four necks at one point or in the solo?
I think he has like more than one, like four hands playing at one time or something.
Yeah.
But anyway, so they get back, and so now they do have the pick. But then they have a little argument about who should play with the pick first. Should it be the guitarist or should it be the lead singer? And KG makes a strong point where he says, well, I play guitar and it's pick, so it should probably go to me. But they both can't agree on it, so they both grab ends of the pick and they rip it in half. And then they get really depressed. And the open mic guy comes back and he's like, what's wrong? And they tell him that they broke the pick, and they're all, anyway, they're depressed. So then this comes to one of my favorite line exchanges in the movie that I'll read. So the open mic host says, he's comforting Tenacious D, you guys, having some satanic guitar pick isn't going to make you rock any better, because Satan's not in a guitar pick. He's inside all of us, in here, taps their chest. In your hearts, he's what makes us not want to go to work or exercise or tell the truth. He's what makes us want to party and have sex with each other all night long. He's that little voice in your mind that says, fuck you, to the people you hate. Now you can stay out here and fight on the ground and cry like babies, or you can go in there like friends and rock. So what's it going to be? KG, let's go in there and show him what Tenacious D is all about. JB, yeah, I already got a guitar pick anyway, and he shows the one that says KG on it. That cracks me up. I don't know why. So anyway, they're going to go back inside and play, and then the open mic, this is the big twist of the movie. The open mic host grabs the pick, and he puts it back into his chipped tooth, and he starts to metamorph into the devil. So the open mic guy was the devil the whole time. And then KG and Jables are coming back because they're like, oh, we can still use the pick. You use one half, I'll use the other. There's got to be some juice left in it still. And then they are face to face with the now Dave Grohl devil, who's like 12 feet tall or taller, 15 feet tall. And that's when we get the final confrontation with the Beelzebos, the final showdown. So, were you guys surprised? Like, do you remember watching this right away? Were you surprised with the devil twist that he was the devil the whole time?
Yeah. I remember being a little, I mean, it definitely wasn't, I didn't see it coming.
Yeah. I didn't expect it in terms of plot line, but you know, it doesn't surprise me at all with everything else in this movie, you know, but, I did not expect it.
No, I thought like, for how straightforward this plot is, I was actually like, wow, they actually surprised me on that one. I never thought he would be the devil.
A little bit of a twist. Know, like.
So let's just wrap this plot up so we can get to some good questions. So basically, the devil shows up and they offer a deal. You know, there's a classic. You got to offer a deal. You got to make a deal with the devil. So the Tenacious D, they challenge Satan to a rock-off. And he cannot deny that because it's part of the demon code. Strictly forbids him from declining such a challenge.
Yeah. He's like, oh, let me check.
Check the scrolls.
The demon code prevents me from declining a rock-off challenge.
Love that. So then the bargain goes like this. If Tenacious D wins, Satan must return to hell on his own and pay their rent. But
$200 rent.
But if Satan wins, JB states that he can take Cage back to hell with him and he'll be a sex slave. So when the devil says, what are your terms? What's the catch? That's the catch. So anyway, KG is obviously not cool with being offered up as a sex slave. I guess that's what happens when you lie twice in one movie, though. You get to be offered up as a sex slave. And then that's when JB replies, one of my favorite lines, trust me, Cage, it's the only way.
The only way.
Way.
So ultimately, the devil kicks their ass, like, in the rock-off. He's playing on the drums. He's playing fucking tasty licks. And KG and Jables, they get to do their part. And KG sings kind of like, there's no way that we could win. That was a masterpiece. He rocks too hard because he's not a mortal man.
Beautiful.
He's going to make you his sex slave. You're going to gargle mayonnaise.
No.
Unless you rock a tasty monster mama jam. Anyway, so they do their part. They try to sing, you know, the devil performs first, and then Tenacious D performs second, and they lose.
It was a valiant effort, though.
It was a good effort. And
what a devil playing on, like, a drum set that has, like a Neil Peart drum set that has, like, 40 drums on it.
Yeah, it's got three kick drums.
It's, like, insane.
Yeah, and then he, like, pulls out a guitar, and he's, you know, plays... You know, check this riff, it's fucking tasty. Yeah, so anyway. So the devil basically tries to shoot something at Cage, and JB jumps in the way, and the bolt bounces off his guitar, and in the process it blows off a piece of Satan's horn. And his fucking horn. And JB is able to send him back to hell with the "once you came, you shall remain until you are complete again." He sends him back to hell, and the hole closes, and yeah. So now the movie kind of ends where Jables and KG have a bong of destiny, or the pod, or what do they call it?
The BOD.
Yeah, it's a bong of destiny, and yeah, it kind of ends with them each taking hits of the bong, and they're trying to write new songs. So, that's the plot. That's the movie. Now we'll get into some more questions. I know last time we kind of mixed the questions more, but I think it's better to just kind of get through the plot so we don't have to spoil things with the questions. So, first off, do you think the devil actually won that?
I think that's very debatable. I mean, obviously it works better for the plot, but I don't know. That's something that I always kind of struggle with. I was thinking about this when I was watching it. Like, I don't think the devil obviously won. Because he's like, because when they play their song, the devil's like, you guys are fucking lame. Come on, Cage, you're coming with me. Like that was a pretty good effort. Like, I'm going to call that like a 50-50, personally. But obviously you can't write like Tenacious D, you can't write a shitty like part of a song and like to make it obvious that they lost, you know? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, right.
But I'm going to say it's 50-50 for me.
And they only had like an acoustic guitar to work with, like guitars to work with, where the devil had like everything
right.
to work with in that rock off, you know? So that edge, I guess, degree of difficulty goes to JB and KG. But on the other hand though, I mean, devil brought it. I mean, they've definitely brought it in that, but it's close. It's an overtime matchup. I'm not sure. I'm really not sure.
I think the devil maybe edged it out by a little bit, but I've always really loved the part that JB and KG mm-hmm. performed. And I think part of the reason why I love that is the indecision, you know, like of KG not being willing to be a sex slave, and he's not confident, but Jables is really confident. And I think that like works really well for their part. But I agree, it's very close. Did we get through the favorite scenes? Mark, did you say your favorite scene?
My favorite scene was the showdown. Yeah, I just liked the musical aspect of it. I thought it was a really good song, and it just really cracked me up that the thing at stake, like with this huge rock-off final showdown, was just their rent money. Like that's the thing that like was put at stake. Like you could challenge him for one thing and it's like a $200 rent check, and then it just killed me that Jack Black's like, yeah, and if we lose then Kyle's your sex slave. He's like, what? Wait, come on. You know, like that exchange really cracked me up. And
yeah,
I think pound for pound that was my favorite scene. There's a lot of other good ones, but that whole exchange just killed me.
I think it's funny, like, I just find it hilarious that the devil has to, like, look at his bank account that apparently he has and be like, oh, man, another 200 coming out of my bank account because I lost that freaking rock off. is this a good movie? Is this a cult classic? We kind of already addressed that it's a good movie. What about the cult classic take, Mark or both of you, whatever?
I think it's a good movie. I don't think it's a great movie. And I mentioned that earlier, like in terms of comedy, like I said, I think it aims at a specific audience. I definitely think it's a cult movie. I think that the fact that it eventually made some of that money back and how the DVD sales helped and everything, I think that shows that it's a cult movie. You know, how much of a cult following it has compared to like some of the bigger ones, like the Big Lebowski we talked about in the last playback. I don't know, but I definitely think it's a cult classic.
I agree.
One thing that I've noticed is so often, like whenever I talk to people, if they have seen this movie, they just fucking love it. But and if they haven't seen it, obviously they haven't seen it. So I don't know if that's like specifically the people that I associate with or the people that I ask about the movie, but that seems to be the prevailing pattern when I talk to people about the movie.
What's your favorite song? I'll go first. I haven't gone first yet. I'll say that I just love how this movie opens. I love Kickapoo. I think it's a great sing-along. It features Meatloaf and Dio, and it features basically Jack Black trying to sing like a young Jack Black, and then Jack Black trying to sing like a older Jack Black. And I've always been a fan of Jack Black's vocal performances, like when he does that, the like, hey, 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 rock. Like, I love that part. And I think Kickapoo tells a beautiful story. I think Kickapoo, like, is a great song that really kind of tells you what the music or the movie is all about, what you're in for. And yeah, that'd be my favorite. Although I will give nods to Beelzebub and Dude, I Totally Miss You. I'm a big fan of Dude, I Totally Miss You.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I think that's that's a pretty awesome ballad. How about you guys? Let's go, Michael. What's your favorite song?
Man, Kickapoo is way up there. Like Kickapoo is very much at the top. I think between Kickapoo and The History of Tenacious D, it's like it's got to be one of those two. Just like
What do you like about History?
I think the whole section where they're talking about Burrito Supreme and a Chicken Supreme and a Cutlass Supreme. Go and I count 1, 2, 3.
that is
a good. And I didn't understand actually until the last time I saw, just like the previous time watching this movie, was like why they kept talking about Cutlass Supreme. It's like that's the car that they borrowed from Lee. It's a Cutlass Supreme. That's the name of the car. I always thought that they were talking about, like they said like a Cutlass Supreme, like some sort of like nice cut of meat, but they're saying Cutlass. They're saying Cutlass Supreme.
How about you, Mark? Is it Beelzebub?
That was number two. It's actually Kickapoo. Everything you guys said, you guys basically said everything I put in my notes. It's not a power ballad, but it's a ballad, right? It like tells a story he had mentioned, and I love the Meatloaf and Dio cameos. Basically we touched up upon everything that's been said about Kickapoo, but I was curious. I was like, is Kickapoo an actual town? So then I went down this little wormhole of Kickapoos in the United States. There is a Kickapoo not only in Missouri, where JB and his family are from, but there is a Kickapoo Indiana, Kansas, Louisiana, Illinois, Wisconsin, and in Seattle, Washington, there is a very scenic mountain range, or a nice nature hike, if you would, called Poo Poo Point. So
wow,
fun fact there. Yeah, Kickapoo,
popular name for a town apparently.
Yeah, I think it's I actually have no idea. I didn't research it that much, but it's all in that same area, kind of too. Indiana, Illinois, Wisconsin. So
this almost hurts me to say, because of how much I love this movie, and how attached I am to Tenacious D and the idea of Jables and the Rage Cage. But was there anything that you didn't like about this movie that didn't work, or even like a least favorite thing or a less awesome thing? Let's go with Mark.
You know, this isn't this isn't their fault. I'd mentioned this a couple times now. This is the second time I saw it. I actually thought that tribute was part of the movie because the music video had Dave Grohl in it, right? And that's, I remember that music video. I thought that was part of the movie, so I was looking forward to it in the movie, and it never showed up. That was just kind of disappointing to me. Not like it ruined the movie. I still greatly enjoyed it, but just personally, I for some reason thought tribute was part of the movie, The Pick of Destiny. So that's my fault. That's not their fault at all. So I can't really say much about that. I guess as far as like acting performances go, I mean, mostly it's just Jack and Kyle and then a bunch of cameos. I thought that as far as the cameos go, that Lee, the pizza guy, I didn't think he was like anything special, but he wasn't really on screen that much. So it didn't really
ruin me
at all.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
And like I said, this is a movie where you're not going to sit down and critique it and like, you know, just kick at it and like, you know, like nitpick it basically. It's a movie where you're just sitting down after a long night and you just want to laugh, you know, and nothing ruined the movie for me, basically.
It's different nitpicking this movie. You can even nitpick Walk Hard more than you can nitpick this movie.
Yeah. Like Walk Hard, I think, is a better movie. You know, there's more emotion in it. There's more, it's a probably better storyline, things like that. But yeah, this is a, like we said, just a cult classic. It's, you know, quintessential Jack Black. I'm not going to pick it to shreds, even though we just spent an hour and a half literally picking it to shreds. But you know what I mean.
What about you, Michael? Is there a moment or something?
In general, I thought the whole like scene where they split where KG picks tits over Destiny, like that whole like them being split was like, it was fine. It was important for like the plot to kind of for them to come together, but I didn't really understand, like a lot of it seemed a little pointless. And I guess we wouldn't get the Sasquatch scene if Jables wasn't out in the forest by himself, but that whole like split was a little, I don't know, whatever. It just kind of like seemed kind of pointless.
Yeah, I agree with you. That was also, I'll let Mark get into it in a second, but I agree. That was also my like meh moment of the movie where it's like, did this need to happen?
Because KG just shows up in the vents because he's already there. It's like, you know, whatever.
Like he could have went on that trip with Jables. They could have all three tripped with Sasquatch, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, yeah, Mark, you were saying something?
I was just going to say that I agree with everything you said, too. I think what they were going for is they're trying to go for one, like, the riff in the band, you know, or, like, you know, there's always the band has, like, their high points, and then they got the, you know, they got a breakup. Kind of like every Judd Apatow movie, right, where there's, like, a friendship, they build a friendship up, and then they split apart, and then they get back together. It's just, I think they're just going for one of those things, but...
Yep, totally.
I agree with everything you just said, though. It was pretty meh, Michael, that pretty much summed it up. So
it has that, you know, there's that classic, like the band almost breaks up moment. I get it. I get why it's there. But like, as far as like the movie viewing experience, it like didn't add that much.
Right. All right. What's the most Jack Black thing that Jack Black did in this movie? Let's go with Michael on this one.
The entire song Classico, where he's singing at the beach with KG right when he meets him. Like that entire, some Bach song, right? Where he's like, can't you see he's the man? Let me hear you applaud. He is more than a man. He's a shining golden god.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
that's the most like Jack Black thing that I think could be done.
We must be on the same wavelength because I put down the exact same thing. Like I put like that specifically, but every single song in the movie and in the soundtrack is just pure Jack Black. Like he does those little like mannerisms that he has. You know, it's
if you think it's time to fucking rock, fucking roll out of control.
Yeah. Yeah. That like when I think of Jack Black, that's exactly what I think of. And like, you know what else I realized too is he reminds me a lot of Andy Bernard.
Yes.
Like the like exactly. Jack Black is the Nardog on steroids, but
Yeah, he's pretty much like the Nard Dog before the Nard Dog was a thing.
Yeah, exactly.
I would say I agree. I also put Classico, but I said another runner-up was just him being baby Sasquatch. I just strong Jack Black vibes. Like only he could like make that entertaining and be able to do like that Sasquatch squeal that cracks me up every time. I already gave mine with the open mic host talking about the devil living in our hearts. Did you guys give your best line exchanges?
Have no. You
done them already?
I don't believe so.
I've already done mine. Mine was basically both of those open mic hosts. Yeah, he, for some reason, had great line exchanges, but the one where JB says, what we got's going to turn your brain into shit, and when he introduces him, saying let me find it exactly again when the open mic host says well that band is coming now, they're gonna come in your pussies. Yeah, that was very funny. the whole aspect of it, of that host having to go out, because I mean we've all been to open mic nights, right? And the host has to come out and he has to say whatever on the card, and it just cracks me up that JB and Kyle are like, oh, we're gonna really sell ourselves here.
Yeah.
You know, and just
yeah,
that's just their that whole, their band's elevator pitch.
Yeah.
All right, what's yours, Michael?
We briefly touched on it, but it's the scene where KG is teaching JB, where Kyle's teaching Jack about the cock push-up, and the specific quote exchange is this, starting with KG. He says, "Sex is a crucial component to the Kyle Gass project. Now drop and give me one cock push-up." "What's a cock push-up?" "What's a cock push-up?" "A cock push-up, my friend, is when you lay on your stomach and lift yourself off the ground with nothing but your boner." Then Jack says, "No problem." Cage says, "The cock is a muscle. You got to learn how to flex it. From now on, I want you to do one cock push-up a day, every day." And then this is when, like, JB's on the ground, like, grunting, trying to do a cock push-up. He's like, "It hurts my cock."
That is pretty fucking hilarious.
And then KG says, "Keep at it. You never know when you'll need to fuck your way out of a tight situation."
Do you guys think that since Jack Black had to take, like, a $50,000 or whatever it was, dollar pay cut, that he purposely made himself have a gigantic dick?
Yeah.
Potentially, because it was $11 million pay cut.
$11 million, okay.
Okay, so moving on, this is kind of the same question, but this is more of just a line. What do you think is the most quotable line? I'm going to say, I'll start, and I think it's, I only say this because this was also got featured in Cards Against Humanity. I love the, "I'm going to slice out your eyes and put your eyes in your balls, and then I'm going to stick your eyes in your ball sacks, and then I will take your balls and I'll put them in your eye holes." I love that line. There's like, that made it into Cards Against Humanity.
Yep, totally.
I think it's like a shortened version where it says like, "I'm going to putting your balls where your eyes are and your eyes where your balls are." I think that's what the Cards Against Humanity says. Anyway, Mark, what's yours?
I wrote down two. One of them actually is a pretty big Jack Black being Jack Black moment too. At one point, Jack Black goes, "Holy fuck, like a dingo." Like that's a pretty Jack Black thing. I feel like not that it's that, I don't know if it's that quotable, but that,
fuck a luck a ding dong.
I feel like I could say that in my daily vocabulary. To me, it's I don't know if it's fair to say this is a line in the song, but whenever I think of the Pick of Destiny, just in my head, I just go, "'Cause it's the pick!" Just that line, like that, it's just always stuck in my head.
And, yeah, it's pretty,
you know, just that first little part just gets in my head. Now it's probably going to be in my head all night too.
It's a good thing to have in your head. All right, Michael, what about you?
Well, my first choice is going to be, was the part where the stranger's talking about slicing the eyes and the balls. But I got the, the follow-up, of course, is the, is like the phrase to send, Satan back to hell. "From whence you came, you shall remain until you are complete again."
Again.
That is pretty good. And that's funny because that's how Ben Stiller says it in his first first time he says it, he says again. And then that's like what they, like, that's what Jabel says too.
Tell you are me up that, complete again.
Complete again.
As a runner up, I've got, this was right after, they perform Classico on the beach, right after JB meets, KG, and Lee shows up. He's got a pizza box in his hand. He's about to go deliver a pizza. He's like, dudes, sweet. That was badass.
Badass. Yeah, that's right. The pronunciation of badass. Yeah, I think I've pronounced badass or badass that way because of that movie.
Yeah, I've definitely said, dude, sweet, that was badass before.
Isn't that funny how you can just mispronounce a word like again?
Yeah.
And badass would make it 10 times funnier. Like, mm-hmm. if Ben Stiller goes again, it's not really funny.
Uh-uh.
It's not as quotable or funny.
No,
yeah.
No.
No, I agree. Those are good. Who do you think won this movie? Who was the winner? Let's go with, who did I go with last time? Michael.
I went last time. Michael.
Yeah. Go. Yeah.
Man, I tried to think, like, I mean, it's got to be the just Tenacious D in general, or maybe we, the viewers who got to experience this beautiful movie, but I'm not sure. I had a hard time coming up with the winner of this one. I may have to just cheap out and go with Tenacious D.
What about you, Mark?
I think if you put it like in terms of tiers, I think Jack Black is tier one. I think Kyle is like right below him. I think Kyle makes a solid sidekick, but I think in terms of acting ability and comedy chops, I think Jack is just a tier above him, and you can obviously see that with him being in more roles and whatnot, just in his, you know, mm-hmm. in his career. But yeah, I think it's Jack, and then Kyle is a solid sidekick, like Michael alluded to, and then after that, I mean, it's just a string of cameos, really, that kind of,
yeah, not a big cast,
piecemeal the movie at all. Yeah.
No, I agree though. I think. Well, I put Tenacious D down as well because I just think they won this movie despite it being like a bomb at the box office. I think it still was really great for their brand. I mean, it won over all of us, and you know, we don't care that it bombed at the box office.
Oh no,
and,
not at all.
And I would consider myself a lifelong Tenacious D fan, and that in itself, Tenacious D in itself is kind of a cult band. You know what I mean? Like, they are almost a cult classic as a band. So why not make you would almost expect their movie to be a cult classic as well. I don't know.
Yeah.
No, I completely agree. And I was going to ask you guys a couple questions too. We got a couple more minutes for this thing. I was going to ask you how you would compare, or how Jack Black and Kyle Gass compare to other recent comedy duos. Okay, I tried to keep it within the last 20 years to keep it somewhat relevant. I'm not going to compare to like Abbott and Costello or something from like the 40s or 50s.
Sure.
Do you have the options?
I have the options.
Okay,
are you ready for them?
Yeah, I'm ready.
So this is Jack and Kyle versus James Franco, Seth Rogen.
Ooh, man.
I can tell you right now, this list is pretty damn good too. There's some good duos on here.
I think it's really tough because you got to look at like Jack and Kyle's music career, HBO career, and then their movie career, I guess. So obviously Franco and Rogan together, they have more star power. They've been in bigger movies.
Mm-hmm.
But they do not have the same love for the rock and roll that Jables and the Rage Cage do. It's hard. It's almost like me trying to decide if I like Tenacious D's music better than I like James Franco and Seth Rogen's movies. And that, I hate you for making me decide that.
Yep, that's where I'm at.
I do not feel sorry at all. No, I agree. It's tough to, it's like if you took their music away, then it's probably no question, it's Franco and Rogan, but the music is what kind of brings it back in.
I'm going to pick just thinking of how much joy Tenacious D has brought me with their music, I have to pick them over Franco and Rogan.
I'm thinking the same thing. Like the amount of times that like we've just like been on like road trips and like just blasted Tenacious D and like sang along and shit. Like it's gotta be Tanakh.
Yeah.
It's very sentimental. 2-1 I'm picking Franco Rogan. They brought me more joy in my life.
It's legit.
But what's that?
That's legit.
Yeah. That's all right. This one. Will Ferrell, John C. Reilly.
Oh god. That one just has to go to John C. Reilly.
Yeah.
Because Will by himself has brought me so much joy through SNL, through internet stuff, through movies, through song. It's Will Ferrell and Reilly. Yeah. I'm not like entirely happy about it, but
I begrudgingly choose Ferrell and Reilly.
Yeah, like realistically, Ferrell, Reilly, and Jack Black are like, I love them all three almost equally, and they do this thing where they sing at the Oscars. They did it years ago.
Oh my god, I forgot about that.
Fantastic.
It's the comedian at the Oscars.
Yep, he's the saddest one of all.
Yeah. So check that out if you haven't seen it. YouTube comedian at the Oscars, Will Ferrell or Jack Black or something, you'll find
it. And it's during the phase when Will Ferrell was going to be in Tropic Thunder, so he has like a Jufro and everything.
You mean not Will Ferrell?
Yeah, or not Tropic Thunder, I'm sorry. He played for the Flint, Michigan Tropics.
He's got a big afro, movie? Yeah.
Jackie Moon when he was, what the hell is that movie called?
Semi-Pro.
Semi-Pro, yeah. He played for the Tropics, that's right. Yeah, he has an afro.
Yeah. But yeah, I got to go. If we're just going, you know, 2x2 there, I got to take John C. Reilly and Will Ferrell.
Amy Poehler, Tina Fey.
I got to go with Tenacious D there. As much as I respect Amy Poehler and Tina Fey. And of course, Parks and Rec has brought me much joy, but that's an ensemble cast and cannot solely be the responsibility of Amy Poehler. And as much as I like 30 Rock, that is also an ensemble cast and cannot solely be the responsibility of Tina Fey. So, sorry.
Wow. Just went full, like, legalese on you there. It's not solely the responsibility of Tina Fey or Amy Poehler.
The success of those shows. I like them both a lot, too.
I mean, I don't think about Amy Poehler and Tina Fey. I know they did like, you know, a ton of SNL stuff together, like, but I don't really think about them as like a duo, like not as much of a duo as I do like Franco and
Rogan.
Right. Yeah. They do more comedy duos and like, you know, obviously in movies aimed at women, you know, as with the exception of SNL. I really hope that there's some blog posts saying that like Super Metal World is sexist because they don't think Amy Poehler and Tina Fey are better comedy than Tenacious D. But that being said, 3-0, I agree. I like Tenacious D better.
Yep.
Flight of the Conchords.
I do enjoy me some Flight of the Conchords, but my love for them, I don't even think I love them. I'm sorry, guys. I like them. And my like for them has recently blossomed, and it never blossomed into a love. And I think that's because I just like rock and roll better. If Flight of the Conchords was rock, that's why I like Tenacious D. They're rock and roll, they're metal. Flight of the Conchords is more indie and singer-songwriter type music. Their stuff is funny, but I still think Tenacious D has a stronger arsenal of songs not by a long shot, but by, I would say, by a good measure. Like, they would win a 100-meter dash against the Flight of the Conchords by 0.5 seconds. Tenacious D.
That's fair.
Yeah, it's a different brand of humor, too. I think Flight of the Conchords are extremely talented musicians. I agree. It's a like, though. I did love the first season of Flight of the Conchords. I thought that was funny. The song I'm Not Crying is, like, one of my favorite songs ever.
Mm-hmm.
I think that song is incredible, but I agree. Michael, what do you think?
I'm having a hard time picking because like Flight of the Conchords is one of my favorite TV shows. And like Man, I think I'm going to go with Tenacious D for this one reason only. A lot of Flight of the Conchords songs are based off of other like already existing songs. They're not really covers, but they're like heavily inspired by them. So like just for like pure originality points, I'm just gonna have to go with Tenacious D.
Sounds good. So that's 3-0 Tenacious D. Quick little sidebar with what you just said, Michael. I wrote down that and this shows us on my mind, and I'm not sure if you guys know the song or not, but in the song Pick of Destiny, it's very similar to a song called Black Diamond by Kiss. You guys know that song? Any chance?
I don't, but
no.
Yeah, you guys should check out the riff, like the like it's really similar, and I can't get it out of my head. I just felt the need to say that. Nothing against Tenacious D, but the,
oh yeah, sure.
I like was just dying to get that out. Anyways, I have two more. Wayne's World. You got Mike Myers, Dana Carvey, Wayne's World group.
And this is even like, you know, now we're talking rock and roll v rock and roll.
Mm-hmm.
Wayne's World movies, which also we need to do a playback on.
Absolutely.
The Wayne's World movies, specifically the first one, and even the second one I enjoy, have brought me a lot of happiness and kind of taught me what it's like to be... Like, when I was younger, those movies kind of taught me what it was like to be a young guy who enjoys rock and roll and not, like, pop music. You know, like, how do you act? You know, maybe not how you act, but, you know, like, what's the culture like? And right. That was a pretty seminal moment for me. But then again, I'm just comparing the movies against Tenacious D's music. And Tenacious D's music, I don't know, it's almost like music always wins for me, because their music is like on my mind, not every day, but at least once a week. I'm thinking of Tenacious D. You know, like that's amazing. that is amazing. Like once a week.
Yeah.
Jack Black's music is popping through my brain in some way, like whether it's just one little thing, like some line from Fucker Gently, like
Zanzibar.
Yeah, Zanzibar, exactly, like that. So gosh, darn it, I have to go with Tenacious D one more time, but that was really close. That was hard for me.
I gotta go with Tenacious D for the same reasons why Rogan and Franco were picked.
Yeah, I though Rogan and Franco, I picked over the D. I picked Tenacious D over this one too. Their music, you guys are spot on. Like, their music is what separates them, and it gives them a lot of points over these other duos because they're just so damn good. Last one. Not in the rock and roll universe, but pretty damn funny. Key and Peele.
I respect the hell out of Key and Peele. But this one is surprisingly easy for me. It's Tenacious D. I love Key and Peele. They do crack me up. But Tenacious D is just more aimed at me as a person. So I get them a little more than I get Key and Peele. But Key and Peele are great.
Gotta go with the D.
So then that would make narrowly I might pick Key and Peele. It could probably change depending on the week.
Yeah.
I might go Key and Peele. But this just showed how much Tenacious D meant to all of us, especially you guys.
Yeah,
I'm over everyone except for Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly.
Yeah, that just shows. I think that just goes to show, like, the humor and everything that I grew up on. Like, Will Ferrell was, I can still remember when Michael's dad, like, you know how he had those SNL greatest hits?
Yep.
Like, that's where I fell in love with Will Ferrell, was through that. And it's crazy, like, you remember that kind of shit, but just watching those for hours, and like Will Ferrell's was always the funniest. We would put on Chris Farley, we would put on a couple others that he had, but Will Ferrell would always make me crack up the most.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tenacious D came along too, and that fed like a whole different part of me, that the music side of me, like, wow, these guys are into the same music. Plus this Jack Black guy can actually act, and he's like super talented. So yeah, the D lives on.
Yeah, there another good list to look at too is where they would rank amongst like comedian musician duo, or not duos, but just comedian musicians, right? So you have, we already mentioned Flight of the Conchords, but like Weird Al would be in there, and it's like Steel Panther, a little more following there, but like, you know what I mean? Like these funny musicians that are actually really talented mm-hmm. and you want to listen to their music, but at the same time are like, you know, purposely doing a parody of.
I got to say one thing though, the D does have a Grammy.
Do they really?
They do. That's correct.
Yep. D has won a Grammy.
What did they win a Grammy for?
They won a Grammy for, after Dio died, they did a cover of, what was it called?
Oh.
The Last, one of Dio's songs. And they did a really good job of it. It's like, it's beautiful. Yeah, and they won a Grammy for that.
Didn't they win one over like a band that, they beat Slipknot and Mastodon.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty controversial where they probably, like, you know, the Grammys are stupid.
Yeah, like, but High Road for by Mastodon, mm-hmm. the negative one from Slipknot. Of course, Motorhead and Anthrax are in that mix.
So it was pretty, that's kind of funny. But yeah, they do have a Grammy under their belt. Nonetheless, no matter how you look at it. But yeah, the D are great. And I don't know, do you guys have anything else to add?
Not really. I will give credit to anyone that sings a Tenacious D song at karaoke night. I heard Tribute one time, and it was just, I mean, the performance was pretty subpar, but the guy really went for it, and I had a lot of respect for him. And it just kind of sums up the Tenacious D audience. Not a lot of people at the bar understood it, but the ones that did gave him props and
loved it,
applauded him on it. Yeah
that pretty much like you said, sums it up for like Tenacious D. If you know of them, you most likely love them or have like a great amount of respect for them. If you don't know them, you really have never heard of them.
Yeah
you're probably like Tenacious D, or you probably would say Jack Black has a band, what, you know, like it was surprised. It's funny that not a lot of people know that.
Yeah, it is kind of uncommon for people to know that.
So, anyway, that being said, the only last thing I was going to say, guys, is if the Pick of Destiny were to exist right now, who would have it? What band has it? And my thought right now, personally, was Greta Van Fleet has the Pick of Destiny, but obviously that would face, I would be torched online for saying that. What do you guys think anybody has it right now?
Oh, Nickelback, of course.
Nickelback had it, but they gave it to Greta Van Fleet.
No, that's actually the first thing that came to mind, and they have a new album coming out in like a week or two that I think is going to be huge, and I just saw they were on the cover of, it wasn't Rolling Stone, but it was like Kerrang or Spin or something, you know, so I just think they're going to blow up here soon, and you know, I think if they obviously, I remember Colin a lot about how people are ripping on him for sounding like Zeppelin and everything, but I just think if a band can come around that's young and hip and just makes rock and roll cool again, then just, I don't know, kudos to them, because like they are really talented, and a lot of people have said this, and I've seen them live too. They're really good live, and like that's gonna, people are gonna notice that. And I don't know. I think they have it too. I mean, the Pick of Destiny, we're talking like this up and coming band that like just has it, you know?
Well, it doesn't have to be up and coming, but whatever you think, who has the Pick of Destiny, you know, it could be up and coming, or if you think, you know, does James Hetfield currently have it, or does somebody else from Guns N' Roses, does Slash have it? You know what I mean?
Right.
It's a hard, Michael, do you have any thoughts on this?
I mean, the first one that comes to my mind is Greta Van Fleet, but I'm also thinking like, I know some people, it's a bit of a stretch, but hear me out. It is not uncommon for like people to consider a band like Imagine Dragons as like rock, or like what, like a quote, you know, modern rock, like mainstream modern rock sound is. So like they're maybe have it, right? 'Cause they've got like a ton of like, They're just like super successful right now.
Well, yeah, I agree with you. You know what's annoying to me is like they have this song called Natural. I don't know if you guys have heard it.
Yep.
But it is addicting. I hate myself for liking it, but it's like, and you're a natural, you're beating heart of gold, you gotta feel something. Like, I'm like, damn, dude. Like, this isn't really rock and roll to me, but you're doing it.
Yeah, because like, so the whole thing with the Pick of Destiny is like, you know, like, this guy goes up on stage and shredding on his guitar way beyond his abilities. Like, they don't really have much guitar, but like their songwriting is really good. So I don't know if the Pick of Destiny would really like apply to songwriting abilities, or if it's just purely like your guitar skill.
So yeah, unless they're using the Bong of Destiny, you know.
That's true. Oh, that's true. Yeah.
So imagine their last album, and maybe it's on the same one as that Natural song, but they literally designed it for like an arena audience and like just for like sports games pretty much. So almost every one of their hits could be played at a sports game. Mm-hmm. Like Believer song.
Yeah.
Like it played at every single sports game. And I'm trying to think of another one. The Natural song. There's another one too, and it's, I'm having a brain fart right now, but like every single one of their hits could be played at a sporting event, and they specifically designed an album to do that.
Smart.
Yeah, it's pretty genius. So that maybe they do have the Pick of Destiny right now. That's a good. I actually like, for some reason, like when you said "Hear Me Out," I kind of just knew you were gonna say. I don't know why, but I was like, he's gonna say Imagine Dragons. So just the fact that I kind of like keyed into that, maybe they do have it.
They might have it.
Another one we're forgetting that they do, Mike, is that Thunder song.
Oh God,
I fucking hate that song.
Just a young gun with a quick fuse.
You know what one I do like is Whatever It Takes. I like that one.
Jesus.
We know every fucking song. It's just like two dudes, isn't it? Am I crazy? Is it just two dudes? I don't know.
I think it's three.
21 Pilots, that's another one that probably had it for a little bit. People consider.
They have four. They have four members.
They have four members, yeah.
Oh, they do. I'm thinking of 21 Pilots, then, my bad.
Cause you're a natural. Anyway, have you guys heard that song, or is it just?
No, I know, like, I know what song you're talking about. Yeah,
I'm aware, but I don't listen to it as much as you do. Fairly.
Hey, well, go give it a listen. It's stupid addicting. Okay. Anyway, we should wrap this up. So remember that you can find us www.supermetalworld.com. Check out all our podcasts. Check out our articles. I think we got things figured out a little more now. I made the move. I made the move to Oregon. I guess this is the first time I'm officially saying this, but I made the move to Oregon. So I'm in Oregon currently, and Michael and Mark are in North Dakota. So we've had to kind of figure out how to make this work. So right now we're all just in a three-way phone conversation. And I think we'll be able to get back to our interviews again. So, and hopefully we can start to put out more articles again too, because we have been lagging, and I apologize for that. So anyway, go to our website, and of course on all social media, search Super Metal World, give us a like or a follow or whatever the hell the social media thing calls it. And go to iTunes, rate and review, give us 5 stars, write a nice review, spread it around with your friends, share it if you like it, if you enjoy it. We kind of do a variety of things. So we'll interview musicians. We'll talk about movies. We'll talk about pretty much anything pertaining to like rock and metal and rock and metal culture. So thank you for listening. You guys got any last second shout outs?
No, I love the Pick of Destiny.
Yeah. Fuck yeah. All right.
I would encourage you to watch or listen to the soundtrack of the Pick of Destiny. That's
yes.
The last thing we'll say.
Yeah, do at least listen to one of the songs. And if you're to listen to one, listen to Kickapoo or Beelzebos or one of those two are a good start. So anyway, horns high.
Horns high.
Horns high.